Betty, welcome to the April 2nd meeting of the Senate Committee on Rules, and thank you, members, for being on time. We are have Representative Doherty here with us, and so I'm going to start with her bill. I'll begin by opening a public hearing and work session on House Joint Memorial 1A. And Arian, why don't you tell us about this?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. House Joint Memorial 1 urges United States Postmaster General and United States Postal Service Board of Governors to recognize addresses within borders of City of Tigard as within Tigard in United States Postal Service documentation. It comes to you with no revenue impact and no fiscal impact, and with 58 votes in support from your House chamber.
Great. Thank you, Arian. And Representative Doherty, why don't you come forward and tell us about your memorial.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Margaret Doherty. I'm the representative from the House District 35, which is Southwest Portland, in the City of Tigard. I'm very proud to bring to you House Joint Memorial 1, the Tigard Zip Code Bill. I'd like to give you just a little bit of background to my community, and I think you'll be able to see how determined we are to get Tigard its own zip code designation. Tigard, like many of the communities, was founded by a group of settlers. Wilson Tigard was the head of one of the families that settled in my community. He was arrived in the area from Arkansas and to an area known as East Butte in 1852. The family settled and became involved in organizing a school and a general store, which, by the way, had a post office, and a meeting hall. East Butte soon became Tigardville, and Tigardville continued to grow, especially when the Oregon Electric Railway triggered development along Main Street. Soon there was confusion between nearby Wilsonville, and it was shortened to Tigard. The Tigard family has been involved in many levels of the community. A Tigard has even graced our own hallowed halls when Charles Tigard served in the House of Representatives in 1911. And how many people in this room can still say that they have a relative of your founding city fathers still living in our community? And Tigard can, because Curtis Tigard, who still lives in Tigard, will turn 106 on Monday. And by the way, he still has his driver's license. Tigard became incorporated city in 1961 and has been growing ever since. We are now the 12th largest city in Oregon with a population of 50,444. And even though we're a large city, it does not have its own zip code designation. We are considered a rural postal route, a substation of Portland. This means that if you have an address search for places in Tigard, many come up with a Portland address. For example, when you type in Tigard City Tigard Public Library in the computer search, the address will be Portland. Tigard High School, the address is Portland. If you go through and put down my house, it comes in to be Tigard. But it's even worse because if you Google Tigard City Hall, it comes up Portland. And so what we're looking for with this is to get our own designation. Part of this came from a Blue Ribbon Task Force that we had a couple of years ago to try to go through and have more of an identity for our community. And one of these came up with our own community zip code designation. Because at that time, there's really no recognition that Tigard is a city. We tried to work with the post office officials in Portland and told them of our plight and so on, and apparently there was not something that they were either concerned with or something that they could do. So they said, I guess you'll have to get an act of Congress, so here I am. Mm-hmm. But not only are we a separate community, which is located in Washington County, but we do need that, our own identity. Businesses that are located in Tigard but whose main branch is outside of the state, many times when they're sent business licenses from the City of Tigard, they say, why are we getting this? When we send things out, it's an indication that you live in Portland. So anyway, so that's why we're here. We're asking that a joint memorial go to Congress, so the City of Tigard, just the City of Tigard, not unincorporated Washington County, but that the City of Tigard get its own designation, because we are Tigard, we are not Portland.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions for Representative Doherty? I see we have a
thank
message.
Thank you, Senator
Ferrioli. A message
Ferrioli.
For you, yes. Howard the Tiger.
That's right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for your testimony, and we'll let you go. And do we have anybody else to testify on this?
We do not.
We don't?
Madam Chair, I move that the... You want me to do this?
We go. Is she on her way, or you think
she's
we should wait?
She's a co-sponsor.
Yeah, that's my idea.
You can always suspend the rule.
And let her vote when she comes. Okay, why don't you go ahead?
Thank you. Madam Chair, I move HJM A or 1A to the floor with a B adopted recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Boquist moves HJM 1A to the floor with a B adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Other than that, Senator Burdick, the good senator, is the co-sponsor and looks like the carrier.
Absolutely. So I don't see any discussion. Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, the motion carries. We will ask Senator Burdick to carry this on the floor. And when she comes, she may want to vote, and we can suspend the rules and allow her to do that then. So I will close the work session on House Joint Memorial 1. And I think we'll go to our executive appointment next. And so I'll open a public hearing and work session on the governor's appointment of reappointment of Henry Lorenzen to the Pacific Northwest Electric Power and Conservation Planning Council. And if you'd like to come forward and welcome, I know we have had you waiting for a while to appear before us. We're very glad to see you today. And just if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and about your work on the Power and Conservation Council.
Thank you very much, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, Rules Committee. For the record, my name is Henry Lorenzen, and again, I'm here before you for your consideration for reappointment to the Power Planning Council, in short. My background, briefly, I graduated in electrical engineering from Oregon State University. I then received my master's degree in business administration from Harvard, and my law degree from Lewis and Clark Law School. My first job out of law school was clerking for a federal judge, Judge James Burns, and then subsequent to that, I served as an assistant United States attorney for 6 years. During that time, I spent about approximately 1 year doing criminal prosecution work, and then 5 years doing civil litigation, representing federal agencies and federal court, including Bonneville Power Administration. My principal work was eminent domain law. As you can imagine, most of my cases were in the rural areas of Oregon, and I was not a particularly popular person when I came to town condemning property. But it was something I did enjoy immensely. After I finished my work at the U.S. Attorney's Office, my dream always was to be able to return to Pendleton and to get my family wheat farm active again. That was my lifelong goal. And when my wife Marcia agreed to marry me, that was the time I knew it was time I could go back home. I've been fortunate enough to have two daughters. We have expanded our wheat farm. Marcia and I live on the farm, and I'm fortunate enough to have a very, very good farm manager and another mechanic employee. Going back to Pendleton, I joined the law firm. It was then Corey Beiler & Rue. They added my name to it. It turned out by circumstance, at the time I returned, there was a vacancy for general counsel for one of the electric co-ops. It was a Umatilla Electric Cooperative. As a result of that, I ultimately became counsel for Oregon Trail Electric Cooperative. The two of them were two of the largest co-ops in Oregon. Oregon Trail is in Baker City. It covers the counties of counties of Union, Baker, Grant, and Harney. It was a co-op as a little engine that could. Peggy Tim, an activist, a community activist, ringing a school bell, selling 700 memberships at a penny each, ultimately formed a co-op that bought out CP National. I was lucky enough to be right at the beginning of that. Mm-hmm. It was a fascinating experience. I continued practicing law. I still practice law somewhat, but I practiced full-time until my appointment to the council 2.5 years ago, which time I resigned my representation of electric cooperatives, and I became of counsel with the firm, no longer a partner. The Power Planning Council for me has been an absolute highlight of my career. It has given me the opportunity to put in action, and rely upon many of the opportunities I've had in the past, my passion for electrical engineering, and I might mention also my prior government service that also plays right into this, my work on the council. I was a member of the Environmental Quality Commission for 8 years. I chaired it. Chaired it at a time when we held the hearings on the nerve agent permit, or the permit for the nerve agent incinerator in the Boardman area. Subsequent to that, I served. I also was faced a very first time. The Oregon was faced with the issue of waiver of water quality standards for spill over the Columbia River to allow passage of fish. That experience has played right in with my work on the Power Planning Council as well. Subsequent to that, I served for 6 years on the Fish and Wildlife Committee, and then ultimately my last service prior to the Power Planning Council, I was president of the State Board of Higher Education for 3 years. The work on the council for me has been exceedingly rewarding. Just a little bit of background on the council. Every 5 years, it develops a power plan. We're now in the throes of the final 6 months of developing the seventh power plan. The as a prelude to the power side of the plan, we're required to develop a fish and wildlife plan. I do not serve on the Fish and Wildlife Committee within the council. Four members of the council serve on the Fish and Wildlife Committee. Four serve on the power committee. I've been selected to serve on the power side. However, they did ask me to chair a special committee on the fish side that dealt with toxics within the Columbia River. I suppose that was done principally because of my prior experience on the Environmental Quality Commission. We're now in the throes of the final 3 or 4 months before we finish up with the draft power plan. I might mention just briefly with regard to the power plan. Historically in Oregon, or in the Northwest, the system has been a energy constrained system, if you want to call it constrained. The issue is principally, do we have enough generation capacity to meet power needs just in terms of bulk energy capability or availability. Because of the large amount of variable generation that we now have on our system, we are rapidly becoming capacity and flexibility constrained. This is particularly true because of the use of the hydroelectric system for spill and for fish passage. That has derated the hydro system some approximately 500 to 600 megawatts in its ability to provide those sort of backup reserves or flexibility reserves. And as a result, going forward, as we integrate additional variable generation, we will be looking probably more closely at gas plants, which can respond quickly to those variations in load, our variations in supply. This is a challenge. Our modeling that we've done that's been recognized in the United States is absolutely cutting edge. Has been very good in determining the bulk needs of the system in terms of its ability to meet the energy needs. Our modeling has not been so good in its ability to get down to the sub-hour scheduling, and that is going to be critical going in the future, and that's one of the things I specifically look forward to trying to deal with as we go forward. I've probably talked enough. You probably have questions of me, and I would enjoy having them.
Okay. Well, thank you. You obviously enjoy your work a lot, and it's good to hear you talk about it. And do we have any questions for Mr. Lorenzen?
Just a fascinating discussion.
I'm sure you would think so. Especially to Senator Biden with his background. Yes, and Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I mean, I have a comment. I do find it fascinating, and as council is finalizing the draft power plan, I would leave you with a thought that the good senator to my right and have had this discussion off and on, and that is in the 21st century, if you don't, I chair the Emergency Preparedness and the Veterans Committee, and I come from a very interesting speckled background, I'll just say. And I would just leave you with a thought in terms of the power plan. In the 21st century, the security situation is dramatically changing, and dam power and transformer stations are at the forefront.
Absolutely.
And as you know, though you come from a legal background in dealing with dams, you can't exactly secure them. They're just kind of, some of them have to be just out in the open because of the way they are. And I would leave you with that thought as we go forward, that there are threats, and as you just pointed out, you're in a system that's very fragile, just barely making capacity at times, so on and so forth. Any hiccup in that system due to the security failures could be quite critical, even in the life-saving categories that I work with. But I just thought for your...
Senator, if I may follow up on that as well, the system is very vulnerable in many respects. The lead time on some of the very large transformers can be up to 2 years. And, you know, if you take out a few of those transformers, you could blacken an area for some time. And that's, you know, it's very serious. And when I, at Umatilla Electric, we also, they really focused on that to a significant extent of how to protect the system and what to do in case of emergencies and what contingencies would be available.
Senator Beyer.
Well, you obviously have thought a lot about it, and I would disagree some with my colleague. It's not about the dams. It's about the transformers and the electronics going into them.
Transformer station.
There actually is a company out of Salem that has just did some work. AIM, you know the company.
Yeah.
Put up some on the APS system in the Midwest to protect that. Well, I'm still not sure how well that would work, so that's good. But I appreciate the work that you do. It's nice to have someone who really understands the system. There. Now, if only we could get Bonneville to pay attention a little bit, that would be good.
We do our best.
I know the staff you have at the Power Council is just outstanding.
It is.
It's a good group to work with. My concern is this year with the water situation is, are we going to see a repeat of 2001 again? It's kind of scary out there.
Yeah.
They may have to bring you back and let you talk to our Environment Committee, who's has his penchant for wanting to do away with everything.
Like natural gas power plants. I did note that.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Lorenzen? Okay, it looks like you've answered all of our questions. Thank you for your service and for being here today.
Thank you very much.
And I do this one. Yeah, it's
a
little different.
I'm just trying to be helpful watching the
clock. Okay, so I'll close the public hearing and open a work session and move the reappointment of Henry Lorenzen to the Pacific Northwest Electric Power and Conservation Planning Council to the Senate floor with the recommendation that he be confirmed. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, the motion carries. And Senator Beyer, it seems like this might be a natural for you to carry on the floor. So we'll ask you to carry it, and I'll close the work session if I didn't already. And moving right along, we have Senator Burdick with us now. Senator Burdick, we did vote on your HJM 1A before you got here. Would you like to vote on it?
I would,
Madam you're carrying
Chair.
It, so.
If your vice and chair
so, oh,
will
I'm
go
sorry,
along
both,
with it.
Both you and Senator Farioli might want to vote. So I'll open a work session for the purpose of suspending the rules to allow Senators Burdick and Farioli to vote on HJM 1A. Is there any objection to suspending the rules? Rules are suspended. Senator, Vice Chair Farioli, how do you vote? He votes Jeffrey Tiger, I think he's 29. And Senator Burdick, how do you vote?
I vote the same as Senator Farioli, aye.
Okay, she votes aye as well, so we'll record those votes. And Senator Burdick, would you like to carry this on the floor?
I would be honored.
Great, okay, and I'll close the work session on HJM 1A. And next, I'll open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2174. Erin, could you tell us about this one?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2174A deletes requirement for Secretary of State to prescribe form of contract for
conduction of municipal audits, permit Secretary of State to grant up to 1 year extension or longer in extraordinary circumstances on deadline for a municipal corporation to file audit, directs governing body of municipal corporation whose audit report contains deficiencies to adopt plan of action to address deficiencies and to file plan with the secretary, requires secretary to notify city or county if deficiencies exist, which could result in withholding of state funds, allows secretary to direct certain state agencies to withhold 10% of specified state funds, otherwise to be distributed to municipality. If municipality fails to submit audit report, requires secretary to provide and prepare annual report with information about timeliness of audit filings and deficiencies found for each municipal corporation, and to submit report to appropriate legislative committee by March 1st of each odd numbered year. There is an emergency clause on this measure. This measure has a minimal revenue and minimal fiscal impact. No statements were issued for either. It comes to you with 58 aye votes from your House of Representatives.
Okay, thank you, Erin, for that explanation. We have two people signed up to testify, so I'll call them both up together. Mary Wenger and Scott Winkles, if you'd both like to come forward. Good afternoon, and welcome to the Senate Rules Committee. Whoever wants to go first, go ahead.
Okay. Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, my name is Mary Wenger. I'm a deputy director at the Secretary of State's Audits Division. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss this bill. Oregon requires municipalities to hire an accounting firm to audit their annual financial statements and to test for compliance with federal compliance, requirements. A copy of each of the audit reports is filed with the Secretary of State's office. The smallest municipalities are only required to self-report on their financial activities. These required filings serve important purposes. They provide one measure of a government's financial management, they promote fiscal accountability, and they create a deterrent for possible fraud. Unfortunately, municipalities don't always comply with Oregon statute. 62 municipalities were over 1 year late in their filings as of February 2nd of 2015, and some were late by multiple years. We grant extensions for reasonable cause if they're requested, but several of the municipalities don't request extensions and they are late. Although a statutory mechanism clearly allows the withholding of 10% of state funding when municipalities fail to take corrective action on in identified and required filings, there's no statutory mechanism that clearly applies if the municipalities don't submit their filings at all. House Bill 2174 addresses this by giving teeth to the filing requirements. This bill authorizes the state to withhold 10% of state funds if a city or county fails to file the required audit financial statements in a timely manner. The withheld funds would be released after they complied with the requirement. In addition, this bill adds clarification to several sections in the municipal audit law. It more clearly puts responsibility to timely file the audit reports on the municipal corporation versus the CPA firm who conducts the audit. This House bill also requires all municipal corporations with deficiencies disclosed in audit reports to adopt and submit a corrective action plan to the secretary. This bill requires the secretary to prepare an annual report that summarizes whether the municipal corporations are timely filing their audit reports and if they're addressing those audit report deficiencies. Finally, as a housekeeping matter, this bill would eliminate the requirement that all contracts for conducting audits and reviews are in a form prescribed by the secretary, as the municipalities are already required to follow the Oregon's public contracting law. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss this bill. I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you. I think we'll hold questions till we've heard from both of you.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Scott Winkles, representing the League of Oregon Cities. And given some of the issues in the bill, it might be surprising to people that we are supporting the bill, but we are. There are, I believe, last count, six of those 62 municipalities were, in fact, cities that were late on their audits. When the concern that the league has with the failure to timely audit is one, the cities aren't eligible for theft insurance through our collective insurance program if they aren't complying an audit, and also the city councils aren't getting the information they need in order to actively oversee and manage their cities. When we have seen, we saw this with the city of Oak Ridge a few years ago. Where the city had not filed an audit, and it turned out that they were in significant financial distress. That information wasn't just being kept from the public, it was being kept from the city council. And when the city council did take note, realized the situation that they were in, they took some aggressive steps to correct the situation. I personally, when we get the list from the Secretary of State's office, I personally call through the list, talk to those city managers and recorders to make sure to see what's going on. And I'll be candid, there are some areas where we are concerned. And so we do support the bill going forward.
Okay, thank you both for your testimony. Any questions for these witnesses?
No, ma'am. One of my cities used to be in this, but with redistrict, it's in Senator Roblin's district now, so I'm perfectly fine with this bill now.
Anybody else? Yes, yeah. Senator Ferriola.
In reference to Mr. Winkle's testimony, there is a concern that some of the municipalities that have small populations, volunteer members of the council, maybe even a part-time city administrator or city manager, often plead poverty or lack of resources to do these audits properly. The chart of accounts is the first thing to fall off the schedule, then the audit is late, and in a disturbing but small number of cases there is diversion of city assets. And it's amazing to me that people in any public setting think that that's a strategy that can be sustained, because it simply can't be sustained. Eventually it always is disclosed. But the obligation to do that audit is, you know, one of the things that basically tells all the folks that are on the city council, the mayor and the rest of the city staff, that at some point in time, not less than a year away, they're going to have to come to accountability, and a third party is going to look at all of the city's accounting documents and bank statements and statements of account and spreadsheets. That is an absolutely necessary safeguard for the public. So it also, those folks that might be tempted, it might prevent somebody who's tempted. So this is one of those things that increases the burden on cities. Those are supposed to be things we all stand against. This is an absolutely necessary process, so I will be certainly supporting this bill.
Okay, thank you for those comments, Senator Ferrioli. Anybody else? Okay, I think we don't have any questions for you, so we'll thank you for your testimony and let you go. And that completes our witness list. I believe I had opened a work session on House Bill 2174A, Senator Ferrioli.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2174A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Ferrioli moves House Bill 2174A to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Okay, the motion carries. Senator Ferrioli, you spoke so eloquently in support of this bill. Would you like to carry it
on
the floor?
Yes, ma'am. I'd be happy to do that.
Okay, thank you very much. And I'll close the work session on House Bill 2174. And we have one bill left, so I will open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2476. And Erin, could you tell us about this one?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2476 allows Department of Administrative Services, with approval of Governor, to adopt by rule uniform policies and procedures affecting multiple state agencies, commissions, and boards. There is an emergency clause on this measure. It does come to you with no revenue impact, no fiscal impact. It comes to you from your House floor with 58 aye votes and one opposed.
Okay, so looks like, thank you for that explanation. It looks like we have one person signed up, and that's Barry Pack. Would you like to come forward and tell us about this bill?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Barry Pack, Deputy Chief Operating Officer with the Department of Administrative Services, and thank you for this chance to talk to you about House Bill 2476. This bill came out of an ambiguity in statute that was identified over a year ago when the federal judge, Michael McShane, ruled that Oregon's ban on same-sex marriages was unconstitutional. At that point, agencies were needing to adopt or amend their rules, their policies, and their procedures to accommodate that judge's ruling. And the agencies came to DAS with a request that we adopt a temporary rule to give guidance to all agencies for the period of time that it was going to take them to go through and look through all of the forms that they have that are adopted by rule, any of the policies that would need to be amended, any of their procedures that would be needed to be amended. We felt, after discussing with the agencies, that seemed like a wise approach, give common direction to all agencies, give them some time to be thorough and look through all of the changes that they would need to make, and then by the time our temporary rule expired in 6 months, those agencies would then have adopted their own rules and implemented them through the normal process. When we began drafting that temporary rule with the Department of Justice, there was some ambiguity as to whether or not DAS had that authority to adopt a rule that would apply to all agencies in these circumstances. The DOJ was fairly confident that if ever challenged, the courts would find that we did, but suggested that we come to the legislature if we wanted to continue that opportunity to come to the legislature and ask to have that clarified. So that's what this bill does. It simply says that we can adopt rules that would apply to multiple state agencies, boards, or commissions, and again, with approval of the governor. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay.
Question, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony, Senator Ferriola.
I certainly understand the non-discrimination issues and the need for uniformity, but this bill appears to give that authority in all areas, not just areas of non-discrimination.
Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, I think that the intent of the bill is an extension of Section 1, Sub 1, which is the ability to adopt reasonable rules necessary or proper for the administration of the laws. So it's really not it was intended to be operational in nature and not policy interpretation.
I understand the intent,
okay.
Madam Chair. It's not the what was the provocation for the bill was a set of issues that needed to be brought into alignment with the judge's ruling. That I understand. That was basically a civil rights issue. But the bill appears to give this authority for all rules. And there are so that is the question. Does this apply to does this bill confer the ability to DAS to rewrite all rules anytime?
Madam Chair, Senator Ferriola, I don't believe it does. I believe it gives DAS the authority to adopt rules that can apply to multiple state agencies. It doesn't give us the authority to go in and change another agency's administrative rule.
Madam Chair, I'm happy with that being placed on the record.
Thank you.
Thank you for that clarification. Any other questions? Okay, I don't see any other questions for you, so thanks for
Thank
your
you.
Testimony. And members, we're in a work session. Senator Ferrioli?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2476 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Ferrioli has moved House Bill 2476 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Boquist?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Council, you said it was there was one vote against this.
Correct.
Just,
who was it?
Yes.
It was Representative Witsit.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. And Senator Boquist, would you like to carry this on the floor? I think you're the only
one. I know it's my turn. I knew that before. I was actually going to kick him on the right here. And say, I should have taken the appointment one, and then he got this one. But I knew as soon as the bill came out, and I saw Mr. Pack out there, this is going to be my turn.
You have to be quick around here. It's true. Okay. There'll be lots more opportunities, too. Okay, so I'll close the work session on House Bill 2476. Members, we're trying to stay caught up as these bills come over because we expect we'll probably get a much heavier workload as session wears on. So we want to be prepared. And so thank you for your attendance and attention. And with nothing further to come before us today, members were adjourned.